Hello, and welcome to Peter's podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Hi, today I'm going to be talking with my wife Wendy Newton, fellow Yogi Raj at Ishta Yoga. But before I do, I wanted to touch on what we usually teach as a good practice, which is that people remember what they hear first, and what they hear last, and what they hear oft repeated. And I decided I would start today by pitching Peter's podcast. So I hope you've been enjoying the podcast. I certainly have been enjoying making it. But one of the things I really need to take care of is funding Peter's podcast, and I've decided to do that using crowdsourcing. So rather than running ads, which I really hate listening to on podcasts, between the varying degrees of sincerity of the people making the ads to just the fact that it has nothing to do with the topic that we're paying attention to in the podcast. So I am asking you to please support my podcast directly by going to patreon.com, picking a level that makes sense to you. There are all kinds of levels, from a dollar a month, which I hope is pretty easy for most of us to do, all the way up to $100 a month, which gets you like a private session with me once a month. So, and all kinds of levels in between. So please check it out, support the podcast so that I can keep bringing you what I hope are really interesting conversations, really interesting monologues, extra content like meditations. Check it out, patreon.com/peterspodcast. Thank you. Here's what I thought was a really good conversation with Wendy. Hope you enjoy it. Hi, Wendy Newton.
Hi, Peter Furco.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
Good. So, here we are, having tea. We feel like we're in Finland right now because we bought some tea while we were there, and that could be enough, but what's really making it enough is that this tea smells exactly like what's called a black sauna. And that's a sauna that they have in the countryside. I don't think they build them in the cities. And in the countryside, where there's kind of a fireplace right underneath the sauna. And so the smoke of the fire just fills the sauna itself, which would make it horrible if you had to go sit in it, but it's prepared that way. And then they open all the doors and let the smoke go out. And it has this incredibly smoky smell inside that smells exactly like the Lapsang Souchong that we bought while we were in Helsinki.
It's pine tar.
Yeah, pine tar.
It's pine tar.
It's probably utterly carcinogenic.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, because they let it out and you sit on these runners, like you can't touch the walls at all.
Yeah.
Like you have to be very careful not to touch the walls, or you just come out completely black like the sauna.
Right.
But it's so good. You know what's so good about it is that it works with all the senses. It's like it keeps the heat somehow, the way that it heats the room and the building. It's the whole building.
Yeah.
It literally is warm the next morning. It's like this very slow, deeply internal heat that just yummy.
That's what they pitch too, right? It's like you don't have to tend the sauna. You just prepare it. And then once it's hot, it's hot.
It's hot all night long.
Yeah.
Or all day, but usually
and since,
night.
In case you're not familiar with the sauna culture, there's very much of a all night long kind of thing where you go in for maybe 15 minutes, and then you come out and jump in a lake or a river or whatever body of water is handy, the ocean, to cool off. So you're doing this nervous system reset, and then you go back in again.
And then you drink, before you go back in, you drink beer.
Yeah.
And they
I guess you could drink kombucha or anything else
you could,
to.
But you know, I think that they consider it somewhat a part of that nervous
tradition.
System reset.
Oh yeah. Calming.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I made that up, that part. Maybe that's just the people that I know.
Yeah. No, I think that's pretty common. So, yeah. But anyway, it's like practices.
So here we are, drinking that memory.
Drinking the memory. But many cultures have practices that are designed to do those kinds of resets,
yep.
to shift your energy. And, you know, we participate in yoga as one of those. You also do a lot of work in polarity therapy
yep.
to do that same work. And you do some Native American work as well that's all designed for those shifts. And all the shifts work. And it's just a matter of are you doing them in a way that works, and you have to be a little bit, discerning about that.
Yeah.
See that you're doing it and it's working, and do some self-study around it and follow it for its highest purpose.
Yeah. I kind of think of it a little bit like, you know, it's not mysterious and there's no magic bullet. It's trial and error. It's like what works for you, not just what works.
Right.
And, you know, if we can, I don't know, if we can get that through our heads, you know, it's like the mind doesn't have to work that hard, but the body, when the mind doesn't work so hard to think like the thing that I'm getting from the outside is going to heal me.
Yeah.
Right. Then the body has a lot of intelligence to it.
Right.
And if you just try something and listen.
Yeah.
Then you know, like, and you get some guidance.
Right. You're in essence putting yourself in alignment with your body's own capabilities.
Yeah.
I said something in class, you know, so it's funny because I hope this doesn't sound like tooting my own horn, because I don't feel that way at all.
Toot away.
But it's like when you can get out of your own way, things flow, you know? And I've been teaching yoga long enough that's an area where I have some skill at that. Like I know how to make that transition to get out of my own way and let the stuff flow.
Mm-hmm.
And so what comes out sometimes, I actually record it sometimes just so I can hear what I say to see what came through, you know?
Yeah.
But it was interesting because I was working with a particular, meditation practice that I actually put on the podcast last week. And it was something about, you know, we have this energetic evolution from the Big Bang, you know, and in that there was the Shiva Shakti whole, right? So we're Brahman, then there's the Shiva Shakti splitting, and then the progression of that coming into being evolves, to use that word, like in a scientific way, right? It evolved, the universe evolves outward into its, all the things from energy, that intense energy that the guy on the Discovery Channel show talks about, this amazing amounts of energy in a concentrated space, you know, and then that evolves into the elements, and then the elements evolve into planets, and then the planets end up with ecosystems, and the ecosystems evolve into creatures, and the creatures evolve into us, right? And so what was coming through the other day was this looking at that from that spectrum lets us makes it easier, I would say, it made it easier for me in this moment that I was saying it, that it was coming out, to take that thing of looking from different perspectives and make it seem more reasonable. Because sometimes we say this stuff in yoga and it sounds like, well, how do you know that? Or you got to say, well, the rishis felt, you know, or something
right.
like that. But somehow the way I had this statement coming through, it was, well, we are Brahman, but then to create this experience, we became this thing of separateness, and then the separateness evolved into all of this stuff. Duality and diversity. And then we evolved into these creatures that had senses. Mm-hmm. And the senses took this energy. And the whole thing is energy, right? It started as this energy, and the energy as it's moving in this expansion of the universe, life, whatever you want to call it, right, included this one progression through this species called people, in which they had five senses that saw this energy in five different characteristics.
Right.
So that things suddenly took on this conceptual idea of being objects and have distinctiveness, even though they're still just energy. And somehow that just rang nicely with me. I was like, thanks for that.
Thanks. Yes. Thanks for that insight there.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like there's this, I don't even know how to say it, but once I got, after studying for a long time and kind of chewing on it and going, you know, getting confused and being stuck in a place and coming back and reconnecting and making it, you know, putting this and that together. And then finally where I got to was the language about how you talk about it doesn't matter as much as the personal understanding that you have of it. Right. So, and language is important here.
Like the feeling of it.
The feeling and just like being able to tap back into that whole conceptual piece of it. Like that's my way. I'm a very conceptual person. I think we share that. And so I can get down to the individual level of like this one person's emotional stuck place where they're not being able to see the big picture. They're not being able to see how that all came to this moment where they're stuck because they got their feelings hurt or whatever general thing happened. That if I can, in that moment, keep my spaciousness around knowing that whole, what I call involution from right. Brahman to where I am now, that
and
I can...
And let's just clarify, you say that because it's coming into being.
Coming into being.
Okay, go on.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't want to...
So if you can maintain that...
Like, sense. I maintain that... Like, the perspective isn't like, I'm right. The perspective isn't, I know best. The perspective isn't, I know more. The perspective is, I'm remembering in this moment, in any given moment, that Brahman weaves itself into all life, and that when it gets... stuck in a place or stuck in a pattern really is what happens in those five, you know, in that step down of energy through the elements, right? Like ether is the least dense and earth is the most dense. And it just steps down. Like, you know, like you would say like, from the city to the town, to the apartment, mm-hmm. you know, like electricity has mm-hmm. to step down. Like that's right. kind of how I see it. So anywhere along that way,
yeah,
it can go off or get stuck or get over, like, you know, can fray its cords or whatever.
Right.
And so, but that spacious piece for me as a practitioner, both for myself and relating to others, is to kind of just remember about that.
Right.
So that I can kind of see, like, where's the glitch?
Yeah.
You know, at what point in that,
right,
what you're calling evolution into form and I'm calling involution into being,
right,
that where's that coming? And also, because for me, the expressive part, right, the part where we get here and we're in a form and we're in a mind and we're in a body and a personality and we have a history and we have memory and all of that stuff, you know?
Right.
Then... yoga practice is about what do we do with that,
yeah.
right? How do we remember that we are energy manifesting?
That's so beautiful because you're allowing for every perspective that we have is valid. It's just another perspective. Like mm-hmm. we can think about ourselves as being Brahman and we can philosophize about that, or we can go into meditation and simply be in our Brahman perspective, or... Yeah. For, you know, 18 hours a day, we're walking around very much in our volved state. And I don't have to say in or n.
Yeah.
E, but volved state, right?
Volved. I'm volved.
So when we're volved, we're, you know, we're totally engaged with all this stuff.
We're
and why
re-evolving.
Wouldn't we be if we don't? We get pain and all this other kind of stuff. We don't have a house to live in. And
because we have to revolve.
Yeah.
We have to be involving.
Yes.
We have to be evolving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Energy
if you're in Sweden, you do it in a Volvo.
Yeah.
Cool. So yeah, that's great. And I picked up Daniel Odier's book just the other day. I had it on my phone, and I was reading the part that I usually use in a lecture on Tantra, and his teacher uses this very funny language. It's like, you know, the she goes through element by element, presenting to him what is this element? What is this tattva,
yes.
really?
Yeah,
right?
What is this tattva?
The tattva, the nature's finer force that expresses. And we shorthand those as earth, water, fire, air, and space. But in essence, they're those qualities of stability and flow and transformation and movement and containing.
Well, the tattvas for me anyway, yeah. like it doesn't have to do with how we express them. It's that they are.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they, you know, in that, you know, some of how I'm saying this, just reveal codes here, is from my polarity training.
Yeah. No
and
one
for
knows
me,
what reveal codes means anymore. That's oh, from like word.
That's from word perfect in from 19 whatever.
Or 80 or,
yeah,
yeah.
Sorry. So let's say, you know, to be transparent, that I the polarity training and philosophy and the Ishta Tantra training and philosophy for me are almost inseparable, but I do get. They mutually inform each other in my expression of them.
Yeah.
So for you Ishtis listening, some of this might be a little, have some different words than what you're used to. But for me, it's not really any different.
Right. But I wasn't really talking so much about the expressing.
Yeah.
That like you, they are, those things are.
The tattvas.
Yeah. And that... we're dealing with that in our evolving life.
Yes. And that's for me, that's right. That right there is where I just for myself have to be really clear that our five senses are there to help us perceive the five tattvas.
Right, exactly.
And not
it's
the other,
like a machine.
Not the other way around.
Yes.
So they are, and we are, but we're, it's like a, you know, that's a Shiva Shakti thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a like, you know, subject-object
right.
issue.
Right.
You know, that we don't... I don't think that we have that much clarity around that.
Right. No, and because we're... Because, and this is why I brought up Daniel Odier,
yeah.
her whole thing is, this is the tattva. You just experienced it. The
yes.
only time it's not real is in your superficial relationship to it.
Yes.
And to me, after pondering that stupid
for
sentence
years,
for a long
for
time,
years and
I
years.
Realized she's saying... thinking about it.
Yes.
You know, that when you separate from the experience and you're in your mind
exactly.
about it, that's when you're out of the capacity to really just be, have enough perspective to know what's going on.
Yes.
So the other day I wrote on one of my brilliant Instagram posts that, you know, most like on Instagram, you're always seeing everybody looking so happy and so
yes,
successful and so this and that, you know. And yet, I think most of the time, most of us are feeling very much in the dark, you know. But it just takes that movement from the superficial relationship back into the experiencing to it.
Let that mind go quiet
right.
for a second.
Yeah,
right.
And then the light is there.
Yes.
But all the work that we do as teachers and practitioners and, you know, people who help someone with a treatment or whatever is to help to try to turn the light back on, to
yes.
show you where is that light.
Yeah. And, you know, yoga in all its different forms, right? All whatever schools and
exactly.
ways, and it's always going to come down to that. because that is the essence of it, where, you know, and for me, that's what links it back to like ancient tantra, you know, because no matter how it comes forward through time or how it gets passed down or what like the technique is or the, you know, the ritual of it is, if it doesn't get you back there, then it lost its juice somewhere.
Right, right.
And if you're not relating to it, this brings it back to our first thing that came up here. If you're not relating to it, then it's not really doing its job. And, you know, it's funny. I just have this one memory of being in, I was in the Russian Far East on Sakhalin Island when I used to work for the foundation. And there were some sort of, you know, they were these, I don't know if you would call them, I don't even know if they would call themselves shamans or if they, if people do call them shamans anymore, but they were native people. And I think they were just kind of like contemporary people who had in their background some shamanic influence. And this one woman was telling me, we were looking at some stones and she was telling me, you know, it's really important that, you know, in this work that you kind of fall in love with it. Like how you respond to the stone is really important. And she was like saying it kind of in this very sweet tone of like, you know, you have to love it. And if you don't love it, it's not going to work. And, you know, she wasn't exactly sort of, it wasn't like a teaching. She was just kind of saying it. But it was felt like something her grandmother had told her and her grandmother had told her, you know, like it's important that you have a relationship with the thing that you're doing or using for your healing or for your practice.
Right.
And that always stuck with me because it was just a little conversation I had with somebody who had this relationship with that piece of work.
Right. And it's so interesting.
I took it forward and, you know, I always took that into my heart.
Yeah. I mean, that idea, I think it works in both directions because it's also like an indicator that you're doing the right thing. Like if you're in love with what you're doing, that's like a sign. That's like the you know, it's no coincidence about the heart center, right?
Yeah.
This is where we feel that sense of love, but it's also the place of relationship, right? So it's like the relationship of you with what you're doing is there. So when it feels like love, then you're in harmony with your karma, et cetera, you know, and the karma and the dharma are in harmony and you're living, doing the right thing. You know, so when you're in love with the things you're working with, the tools of your trade or whatever, that's again, a sign. And you have to love it for it to work. It's just another way to say that.
It's a very particular way of saying that. And as I'm hearing you reflect it back, I'm thinking, and we kind of need to also make a distinction, like if you're too much in love with it, sometimes like it can be a problem.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people
like define in love, you know.
I wasn't planning to go here, but when you said the thing about the juice, you know, coming through, it's something that's, advice is too strong. It's like a part of a teaching, I guess, an art of teaching kind of teaching, that when you're a new teacher, it's good to have some humility around things and because there's a great deal of oomph, like ego oomph about teaching. You know, and some people, they are more in a fear place around teaching, so it's hard for them to teach. And other people, like, they get into it and suddenly it's like, wow, people love what I'm teaching.
I'm so powerful.
And that's very tempting and alluring. And then once you're teaching from that place, the juice has, it says, well, I can't get through here because you got all this other crap floating around and there's no room for me to flow through.
Right.
You know, so, and part of what you were saying, falling in love with the tools, I think is a side effect of that too. It's like, wow, this thing is so magical.
Exactly. It goes into that magical thinking place.
Right.
And, you know, I don't even really know how to describe how you know the difference there.
Mm-hmm.
except to say that, again, it's trial and error, mm-hmm. and that it's, you know, that if that feeling of energy flowing through you, not about you, mm-hmm. is coming through that object. You know, it's that's a really tough one.
No, I mean, but I think it's worth talking about because, you know, we just laid out this big challenge to
yeah.
to teachers, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I think the way you do it is exactly what you say, trial and error, but to phrase that a little differently, it's like a cycle of following one's intuition and then using discernment on what came of that.
Yeah.
And then the more you do it, the more you go through that cycle, the more you're honest about what just happened, the more you start to say, wait a minute, why am I still thinking about how great it was what I said the other day?
Right.
You know, then, you know, okay, so I'm letting this be too much about me and how great I am and not so much about I'm just a vehicle for the stuff to flow through
right.
me.
Right.
Thank you to all my Patreon sponsors. You guys have such great taste.
You know, that's where it brings me back to our original talk about the Buddhas and the five senses. And, you know, we are all different vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
We all have a different, you know, I hate to call it machinery, but, you know,
yeah.
The vehicle has different kinds of components.
Right.
For
so
each
our
of
right
us.
Place might look different in another person.
It very much so.
Yeah.
And how it comes through could be very different. So like, you know, when we talk about like, I'm a very visual person, mm-hmm. or I'm more of an oral person, I hear things, or, you know, so mantra might be a perfectly valid tool to use for one person where it might just not be that valid for another person.
Yeah, so resonant.
Just, you know, and, you know, oils. I've had this actually with oils a lot. Like, people are so into oils. I'm so sensitive to them that I can sometimes not even be in the room
mm-hmm.
when certain oils are being used.
Yeah.
And I always feel a little bit defensive because the oils people always want to say, oh, no, this is really good for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like breaking out in hives inside my lips, mm-hmm. and I'm like worrying that my whole system is going to get totally inflamed,
mm-hmm.
and going like, I can't, like, look, we have this discussion later.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't use oils in my practice because I can't tolerate them.
Mm-hmm.
So even if they're good for my client, I don't use them except very judiciously.
Mm-hmm.
The like two or three that I can use, and I feel very, very, I have really good boundaries about that.
Right. I hope the new ones I got for the beard, in my beard oil are okay.
No, if they're in a carrier, it's usually okay. not that kind of oil. So that's just, you know, a little, you know, tidbit about my system has that
yeah.
makeup. That's how
yeah.
I'm built. And the tool is going to be very different for somebody whose vehicle is really needing those,
right.
those chemical changers, you
yeah,
know, transformers.
Chemical level change. Yeah.
Right. My chemical level is super hyper.
Yeah.
So for me, like, I can really feel like I probably should work more with stones and gems because they're very stable.
Right.
You know, and I can feel, I can almost right. like can have a whole conversation with
right.
them.
Right. Well, go Ayurvedic. That's like going to the kapha
exactly.
solution instead of the vata
exactly.
solution.
So all I'm saying is that when we talk about that stuff, it could be like a practice like mantra or yantra, or it could be tools like oils or stones.
Right.
You know, there's no one, there's no right answer.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that I like so much about Ishta is that we always say it depends.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not like a way to brush off a student's question. It's
right.
a way to open up the field for the student to say, look, here's your question, and here's how I am going to guide you to finding an answer for yourself. not here's the answer.
Right.
Because when we say that, here's the answer, then students who are pretty green, they're just learning, they take it and they say, here's the answer, and they give it to their students mm-hmm. like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is where it gets, that's where these traditions can go very wrong.
Yeah.
And so right at the outset, I think it's important for us, even though it might be frustrating because we want an answer today, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm in pain, I need to have some help.
Yeah.
Right? But luckily, we're not dealing with like broken legs, which actually just need to be set.
Trauma,
we're dealing
yeah.
with, you know, growth.
Right.
Right? Or transformation of some kind.
Right.
So it's worth it to, for, you know, if we want to be teaching, for us to take the time to examine what's my relationship with this material.
Mm-hmm.
Because then that's how we're going to teach it to the people who come to us once we've established
yeah.
our own relationship to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'll never forget, you know, and sometimes I repeat myself because certain things have stood out so strongly in my own
it's okay.
history.
We're old now, it's
yeah.
fine.
We have those
what old people do.
We have those old stories. But I remember Douglas saying, you know, after he did his teacher training, which he, you know, he just kind of came upon. He was dancing and he found yoga, and yoga was really helpful in his dancing. And then he found Ishta and he did his teacher training. And he and I used to sit on the box across from Alan when Alan was teaching meditation class. And we were the demos, you know,
right.
for them. And because Doug did his training before me, you know, he had been doing it longer. And he said, you know, after he did his training, he would sit in class and he couldn't even think of a question.
Hmm.
It was just like, I'm just listening to what my teacher is saying to me or is saying to the class. I'm just listening and listening and listening and listening and listening and letting it soak in, you know,
yeah.
over and over again, week after week.
Yep.
And then maybe eventually, you know, I'll have a question,
yeah.
you know, and then maybe eventually there'll be something to say. But it was so refreshing to hear the lack of urgency around
yes.
sharing. It was still about absorbing.
Well, I feel like if we can cultivate both of those impulses in ourselves,
mm-hmm.
right, that in order, I've been actually thinking about that teacher-student relationship a lot because I don't know why. It just seems it's coming up a lot for
mm-hmm.
me. But
well, teaching as, people who want to be teachers.
Is... As a teacher, I feel like the main thing is we really have to have a head of steam for wanting to share.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it's always a cycle because we, in order to be an excellent teacher, we have to also be able to cultivate that part of ourselves that's a student and that has a head of steam about wanting to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And as teachers, we have to appreciate our students for that. And as students, we have to appreciate our teachers for that. But when we're both, like when we're a teacher, we have to not forget that we're also always a student.
Mm-hmm.
And as a student, we have to remember that we are also a teacher, right? If we're teachers, right? So there's this balance to be struck between those two things. And if we can, as the student, if we can value the teacher, whoever that is in the moment for
mm-hmm.
us, and as the teacher, if we can value the student's energy and input and desire to learn from us
mm-hmm.
as what it is, like there's nobody to teach if there's no student. There's nobody to learn from if there's no teacher, right? So we're both of those things. And I think remembering that both sides of the coin helps us to balance out both sides. Like, I love to go places and just be the student, but it's really hard for me sometimes because if I walk into a meditation class at Ishta, the teacher's like, oh, Wendy's in the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, no, just stop that.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be here to, I'm actually just a person learning. I'm
mm-hmm.
just, you know, in the Sangha, let me be here.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's hard for me to be the student when I'm learning from somebody I don't know
mm-hmm.
because I know so much and I'm always comparing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like, how do I do that? So it's, it's a little bit of a juggle.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that, because I've been listening to a number of podcasts lately, and you end up constantly encountering other people's systems, mm-hmm. you know, and they're just right. sharing maybe 45 minutes of their system.
Yes.
And it's been interesting for me, because some of them I just kind of dismiss outright. Like, it's like, oh, I don't really... I'm not very interested in what you're saying. It sounds great what you're doing. Go teach your students, you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But then sometimes there are people who, there's something about it that it's intriguing to me, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that I sort of suspend my teacher role during that time and just like let them lay out their system. And then maybe after the fact, I'll go back in and say, oh, well, wait, that's, how is that related to what this is? You know? And
mm-hmm.
so it's been an interesting exercise in like going back to that, I guess in Buddhism, you call it the beginner mind, right?
Beginner
like how
mind,
do you go back
yeah.
to the allowing it to just be what it is?
Yeah.
And then to process that yeah. afterwards.
Yeah, it's a really it's a really important thing to be able to do on both sides of that equation, I think. You know, how do you give as a teacher without going into ego, and how do you receive as a student without going into, like, I don't know, some sort of sycophantic, like, teach me everything kind of place, you know?
Right.
So I guess that's also, it's different for everybody.
Yeah. Well, and I think it depends on how solid you are in your own sadhana also. You know, if you have a sadhana and someone else says, here, I have the sadhana, and this is what you should do, you know, depending on how firm you are in your own practice, you might go, wow, that's really so interesting. It has this parallel to what I do. And you might look at it more academically, you know,
mm-hmm,
or you might say, whoa, this is like filling a void that's in my own practice that I've been waiting for. And you might grab that tool. Or you might just say, that was so interesting. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed spending that time with you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I've
certainly done that.
I've been working with this group that's a yoga therapy group.
Mm-hmm.
I also do yoga therapy. And I constantly have this feeling with the other teachers that they just are not into the asana part of what I do. Like, and finally, one of the teachers said to me, well, the asana didn't work for me, but here's what I really liked. And I was like, that just felt so good. Like, I'm not teaching Vinny yoga sequence because I'm not a Vinny yoga teacher.
Yeah,
I'm an Ishta teacher. And at the same time, the principles of what I'm bringing, it's about the nervous system, it's about the underlying energetic piece, like not the physical therapy piece.
Right.
Was really, really important.
Right.
And it was sort of like, finally, I could say, like, you guys do that part according to your tradition.
Right.
And here's what I might be able to add.
Right.
Right. And that just sort of like evened out everything.
Yeah.
And that's really important, I think, for people amongst traditions.
Yeah. And
right?
I mean, hopefully traditions are living, you know,
right.
growing and living, evolving.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, for instance, the whole realm of trauma.
Yes.
Is gaining this great boost from taking yoga as a path, as a tool. And so for, what did you call it? The healing kind of yoga?
Therapy.
Yoga therapy. You know, that's going to be a gigantic blending from what the trauma yoga people are doing and what that could bring into therapeutic situations, because so much of what people need therapy for is going to be from some trauma.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the asana is going to be a component because it helps people get in their bodies when they've taken off. Maybe I'm misinterpreting both schools.
No, it's just so complex in that world. I hesitate to even open that Pandora's box right now. Mm-hmm. Just because there's so much
complexity. Well, we'll leave the box closed, but we'll put a little post-it note on the top of it.
I think yoga is therapeutic, period.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and for me, that's just that's the ground upon which I build my practice. Mm-hmm. I think it is therapeutic. I think it's, you know, it's that kind of an art. Mm-hmm. If we're doing our practice, we're transforming old wounds, mm-hmm. whether they're physical or emotional or mental, and that's already in the basis of yoga.
Because we're energy.
Because we're energy, and it comes through all of the systems.
We're Brahman, and here it is, flowing all the way down to where it looks like we're doing poses, but in fact, we're just moving energy.
And that comes back to holding the big perspective, doesn't it? Right? That's what the role of the teacher is, to hold the big perspective so that people can come and get more conscious.
Yeah.
Right?
And as the teacher, you can hold that in your mind, but only share what the student needs.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hear, hear. Well, we just solved all those problems.
Yes.
Over a cup of tea. That smells like a black sauna.
Yeah, and I only have... Now I can read my tea leaves, I think. Uh-huh.
Awesome, Wendy. Well, thank you for having this lovely breakfast chat.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. Thank you,
Anything
and you're
else
welcome.
To add? Where are you teaching now? You got new classes.
Thank you for the plug. I'm back at ISHTA after a hiatus of what I call a semester. Uh-huh. And I'm teaching Mondays at 7:45 and Wednesdays at 4 p.m. a class that I came up with called Move and Meditate, which is basically just all of yoga. Mm-hmm. And I am doing private practice of yoga therapy and polarity, and you can find me. I think you can find me out there.
Mm-hmm. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, he'll put a link in the show notes. I'm getting used to these kinds of words. And I'm also teaching polarity, both the first and second levels of polarity, in Long Island and in Queens.
Yeah, I was corrected when we lived out there. It's on Long Island.
On Long Island. On the island. In Long Island. On Long Island.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, so, cool.
Thanks for asking.
And we're meeting on Friday, which is tomorrow, to talk about our retreat calendar for the year and workshop calendar for the year. So we'll have more about that soon.
And I should say that we had to go out and get a calendar and put a date on the calendar to talk about our calendar.
Exactly.
So there you go. We're serious. We mean business.
Right. Bringing it down. We're evolving it.
We're evolving.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks again. Have a beautiful day.
Namaste.
Have a super wonderful day, as Alan says. I'm using the Padma Mudra.
That's the podcast mudra.
Podcast mudra, right? Which is where your heels of your hands come together, your thumbs come together, your fingers come together, and blossom like a lotus at the heart center. Oh. Hari Om Tat Sat.
Namaste.
Namaste. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Wendy. I also have new classes on the schedule this season, this next couple of months. I'm teaching on Tuesdays at 7:30, regular class I've been teaching for a really long time. I'm teaching Wednesdays at 6:45 at ISHTA. I'm teaching Thursday at 12:30, and I'm no longer teaching in the evening on Thursdays, but then I'm teaching uptown in 56th Street at Floating Lotus on Saturdays at noon, in addition to my 9:30 meditation class on Saturdays at ISHTA. So I hope to see you somewhere. And it gives me the opportunity to one more time say, you know, if you took a yoga class once a week, that'd be about $100. So consider funding Peter's podcast at whatever level makes sense to you. Thanks so much. And I'm going to conclude with a quote from Daniel Odier, who I mentioned in our talk today. He's referencing what his teacher said to him when he first met her, when he's talking about Shiva and Shakti. Shiva and Shakti are indistinguishable. They are one. They are the universe. Shiva isn't masculine. Shakti isn't feminine. At the core of their mutual penetration, the supreme consciousness opens. I hope that our consciousness in our country opens soon. It would be super wonderful. Have a great week. Namaste.